Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, March 5th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, High School Boys Basketball State Champions. Midland Christian Seniors Lead Mustangs to State Title. By Mike Waters, MRT correspondent. Robinson. The four starting seniors on the Midland Christian boys basketball team were determined to close out their Mustang basketball careers with a state championship. And that came to fruition, leading wire to wire, as number 2-ranked MCS emerged with a 55-39 victory over the Woodlands Christian in the TAPS 5A Boys State Championship game Saturday afternoon at Robinson High School. I'm speechless, said MCS senior Andrew Fox, who scored all 8 of his points in the fourth quarter. We won this as a team. Great teammates. Worked hard all season, and this just amazing. Josiah Ray, who scored a game-high 19 points, including 14 in the second half, echoed those sentiments. This means everything, said Ray. All the hard work paid off. Kaysen Pruitt recorded 10 points, hitting a pair of buzzer-beating shots in the championship win, a 3-pointer at the end of the second quarter to give the Mustangs a 21-14 advantage, then a layup just as the buzzer sounded to end the third stanza, for a 32-25 lead entering the final period, which saw MCS, 34-5, outscore the Woodlands Christian, 23-14. After a 3-pointer by the Woodlands Christian to begin the fourth quarter narrowed the lead to 4, an 8-0 Mustang run, consecutive threes by Pruitt and Ray, then a basket by Fox, opened a 40-28 cushion, and MCS never looked back. Zach Day, the final member of the senior starting quartet, scored 11 of his 13 points in the first half, facing double and triple teams throughout the game. This is such an unbelievable feeling, Day said. Win as a team. Trust your teammates. We knew that Woodlands would use the double team strategy on Zach, MCS coach Chris Ryburn said. After Zach's big game yesterday, that was something we accepted. And Zach did a great job of getting out of traffic and finding his teammates. Sophomore Brody McHugh chipped in with 5 points to round out the scoring for the Mustangs. Ryburn said he was so proud of his team and that close-knit senior group. All the showing up for practices, the hard work these guys put in, paid off, he said. Midland Christian won its third TAPS championship in boys basketball, and the first since back-to-back titles in 2007-2008. This is a dream come true, Ryburn said. It is so hard to believe at the moment. We did not shoot that well in the first half. Our defense has been our backbone all year, and it carried us again. State champions, great feeling. So happy for the team. Day, Fox, and Ray were all named to the 10-player all-tournament team. The Woodlands Christian, 27-8, was led by Trez Luzzi, who tallied a team-high 13 points. Midland Christian, 55. The Woodlands Christian, 39. A conversation with Chris Ryburn. Read our interview with the Midland Christian boys basketball coach on page B1. This article is entitled Well Setbacks, a Hang-Up for Planned Housing Development, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. A zone change request received unanimous approval from members of the Midland Planning and Zoning Commission. But approval for Scott Bowden's request came after an extended discussion about building new homes near oil wells. Bowden had requested a zone change from AE, Agricultural Estate, to SF2, Single Family Dwelling District, as part of the next phase of Pavilion Park addition at Solomon Lane and Trentwood Drive. The zone change would allow Bowden to add 58 lots on a 20.91-acre tract out of Lot 8, Block 2, and 10 acres out of Section 1, Box X, HP Hilliard Survey. The property is a replat of Pavilion Park Section 15, which is currently in the preliminary stage. Commissioner John Burkholder questioned the proximity to existing oil wells, noting state law mandates setbacks of 500 feet. For a reason, and yet we've seen these continual variances. He urged city staff to take a hard look at the setback variances they issue, especially when it comes to homes and children living there. Commissioner Adrian Carrasco commented that he would like to see one common rule for variances. If we approve one variance and then don't approve another variance, we have problems, he said. A representative of the applicant assured the commissioners there were no wells on this particular section, while there were four wells on a section already zoned SF2. Commissioners also cleared the way for a new restaurant to be built near the Summit Center at Mockingbird Lane and Midkiff Road. They unanimously approved a request by PubWT LLC for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant. The restaurant, to be called the Public House WT, will be built at 3200 Mockingbird Lane. The total area of the restaurant will be 3,094 square feet, with an alcohol serviceable area of 2,374.75 feet. Proposed hours of operation are Sunday through Wednesday from 11 a.m. to midnight, and Thursday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. the following day. The proposed hours for alcohol service are the same. Juji's Kitchen inside the Claydesta building at 6 Desta Drive received unanimous approval for a specific use designation with the term to allow the sales of alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption, as it expands its restaurant and service hours. The restaurant is undergoing renovations that will bring the total area to 8,076 square feet, with an alcohol serviceable area of 4,446 square feet, split into 3,150 square feet inside the restaurant and 1,296 square feet in the Claydesta building atrium. Current hours are 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. Sunday. The new hours for both operation and alcohol service would be 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Commissioners also approved a request by Schumann Surveying for a zone change from O1, Office District, to TH, Townhouse District, to allow for the construction of a townhouse development on three lots at George Avenue and Bryant Street. This article is entitled Domino's Constructing New Store at Illinois and Midkiff by Mella McEwen, staff writer. Domino's franchise owner Cassie Garrity, who owns 10 Domino's stores with her husband Jim, doing business as Sweet Pizza LLC, is altering the Midland footprint. Sweet Pizza is in the process of constructing a new store on the southeast corner of Illinois and Midkiff that is expected to open around August. The new store will be a pickup and delivery location and will replace the current store across the street at the northwest corner of Illinois and Midkiff. The building will have an additional space that will be available for lease. This article is entitled, Event Celebrates the Past, Honors the Future, by B. K. Richter, staff writer. The Haley Memorial Library and the Daughters of the Republic of Texas, Aaron Estes chapter, on Saturday hosted the annual observance of the signing of the Declaration of Independence by the founders of the Republic of Texas on March 2, 1836. The celebration, which was hosted by the Haley Memorial Library on Indiana Street, featured two student essay award winners from 75 submitted essays and included an official flag ceremony, an official toast to Texas, and a three-cannon salute featuring the ceremonial replicas of the Twin Sisters of Cincinnati. The Saturday celebration was standing room only, as more than 100 guests filled the lobby of the library. The first student essay featured during the celebration was a piece dedicated to Texan Colin McKinney by fourth grader Ainsley Stike of the Hillander School. Colin McKinney was a famous Texan who made a great impact to our state, Stike wrote. With Texas winning independence, he helped to write the Constitution of the Republic of Texas. Even though he was older, he was elected as the delegate from Red River County to the 1st, 2nd, and 4th Congress of the Republic of Texas. The second student essay featured the Canary Islanders and their impact on the Republic of Texas by San Jacinto Junior High 7th grade student Kinley Cuevas. Cuevas addressed the harsh living conditions of Texas for the Canary Islanders in her essay. The conditions were severe, but they continued to push through these hardships by remaining positive and keeping their goal in mind, she wrote. Although there were many struggles to get to San Antonio, the Isleños' influence brought light to the Texas economy by building the foundation from the ground up. Not only did the Isleños plant crops, they also brought much more, such as irrigation, which brought water to the city. District 1 representative of the Daughters of the Republic of Texas, Corina Bilbrey, and Chapter Vice President Jerry Lilly were both on hand to present medals as well as certificates to Stike and Cuevas. Meanwhile, the director of the library, J.P. Pat McDaniel, was also on hand to give a brief history of the celebration. It's a great time to recognize our history, McDaniel said during his introduction of the Haley Memorial Library. When I came here in 1995, we decided to do the first Texas Independence Day celebration in March of 1996. From there, the tradition of the celebration of Texas Independence Day has continued every year at the library. The Nita Stewart Haley Memorial Library and J. Evetts Haley History Center helped to facilitate the study of southwestern Texas history. The library houses more than 25,000 books, manuscripts, and other printed materials documenting Western history. For more information on the Memorial Library, visit their website at https://haleylibrary.com. Toast to Texas. To Texas, joyous and sparkly evergreen when it rains, enduring in drought, timeless, endless in boundaries, exciting. Home to the adventurous of yesterday and today, with shrines from the past and space and spirit for the future. To Texas, everlasting in the hearts of your people. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one and indivisible. This article is entitled Final Candidates, Ballot Order Announced for At-Large Election by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. The City of Midland announced the final ballot positions for the five candidates running for the at-large city council seat. March 4th was the last day for candidates to register for the May 4th special election. Here is the list of candidates in ballot position order according to the city. First position, James R. Bull Henry. Second position, Eric Davidson. Third position, John Burkholder. Fourth position, Cheston Blank. Fifth position, Ben Roberts. The winner of the election will serve the remainder of the at-large term, which ends in January 2025. Should they seek to serve a second term, they would be required to run for the office again in November, the city said. There will be 7 days of early voting, April 22nd to 26th, and April 29th to 30th, according to the Midland County Elections Office. Early voting will take place at the Midland County Elections Office, 2110 North A Street. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, March 5th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, High School Boys Basketball State Champions. Midland Christian Seniors lead Mustangs to state title. By Mike Waters, MRT correspondent. Robinson. The four starting seniors on the Midland Christian boys basketball team were determined to close out their Mustang basketball careers with a state championship. And that came to fruition, leading wire to wire, as number 2-ranked MCS emerged with a 55-39 victory over the Woodlands Christian in the TAPS 5A boys state championship game Saturday afternoon at Robinson High School. I'm speechless, said MCS senior Andrew Fox, who scored all 8 of his points in the fourth quarter. We won this as a team. Great teammates. Worked hard all season, and this just amazing. Josiah Ray, who scored a game-high 19 points, including 14 in the second half, echoed those sentiments. This means everything, said Ray. All the hard work paid off. Kaysen Pruitt recorded 10 points, hitting a pair of buzzer-beating shots in the championship win, a three-pointer at the end of the second quarter to give the Mustangs a 21-14 advantage, then a layup just as the buzzer sounded to end the third stanza, for a 32-25 lead entering the final period, which saw MCS, 34-5, outscore the Woodlands Christian, 23-14. After a three-pointer by the Woodlands Christian to begin the fourth quarter narrowed the lead to 4, an 8-0 Mustang run, consecutive threes by Pruitt and Ray, then a basket by Fox, opened a 40-28 cushion, and MCS never looked back. Zach Day, the final member of the senior starting quartet, scored 11 of his 13 points in the first half, facing double and triple teams throughout the game. This is such an unbelievable feeling, Day said. Win as a team. Trust your teammates. We knew that Woodlands would use the double-team strategy on Zach, MCS coach Chris Ryburn said. After Zach's big game yesterday, that was something we accepted, and Zach did a great job of getting out of traffic and finding his teammates. Sophomore Brody McHugh chipped in with 5 points to round out the scoring for the Mustangs. Ryburn said he was so proud of his team and that close-knit senior group. All the showing up for practices, the hard work these guys put in, paid off, he said. Midland Christian won its third TAPS championship in boys basketball, and the first since back-to-back titles in 2007-2008. This is a dream come true, Ryburn said. It is so hard to believe at the moment. We did not shoot that well in the first half. Our defense has been our backbone all year, and it carried us again. State champions, great feeling. So happy for the team. Day, Fox, and Ray were all named to the 10-player all-tournament team. The Woodlands Christian, 27-8, was led by Trez Luzzi, who tallied a team-high 13 points. Midland Christian, 55. The Woodlands Christian, 39. A conversation with Chris Ryburn. Read our interview with the Midland Christian boys basketball coach on page B1. This article is from the sports section. It is entitled, MHS grad Hopple wins world championship in indoor 800. By Christopher Haydorn, staff writer. Bryce Hopple has held the title of UIL state champion, NCAA Division I champion, American champion, and Olympian. The Midland High grad is now a world champion. Hopple won the men's 800-meter final with a 2024 world best time of 1 minute 44.92 seconds during the World Athletics Indoor Championships track and field meet Sunday at Emirates Arena in Glasgow, Scotland. It was Hopple's second medal at the World Indoor Championships after he claimed bronze at the 2022 meet in Belgrade, Serbia. The CNBC telecast said Hopple is the first American to medal twice in the 800 at the World Indoor Championships. Hopple spent most of the second and third laps in the second place position and made his move past Sweden's Andreas Kramer before the final turn on the fourth lap. Hopple showed a strong burst down the final stretch to leave no doubt who the winner would be. Kramer placed second, 1 minute 45.27 seconds to claim silver, while Belgium's Elliot Crestan took bronze, 1 minute 45.32 seconds. Spain's Mariano Garcia, the 2022 indoor 800 champion, finished fifth, 1 minute 48.77 seconds. It was a dominant meet for Hopple, who ran the fastest time, 1:45.08, in Saturday's two semifinal races. Hopple also won his heat race on Friday with a time of 1:46.15. Hopple, who has trained this year at high altitude in Flagstaff, Arizona, appeared well equipped to handle three straight days of racing at the Indoor World Championships. Hopple is a four-time American indoor champion in the 800 and a two-time American outdoor champion in 800. He is ranked number 8 in the world. Hopple will look to qualify for his second straight Olympics at the U.S. Olympic Team Trials June 21st to 30th in Eugene, Oregon. This article is entitled, Midland Fire Responds to Third Apartment Blaze, by B. K. Richter, staff writer. An apartment fire in Midland erupted Monday at 12:37 p.m. at the Palladium Apartments, 2300 La Mesa Road, on the southeast side of the city. This is the third apartment fire in less than 30 days. Midland Fire reported that the source of the blaze happened along an exterior balcony wall, and there was no extension to the attic. A press release from city officials also confirmed that no residents were displaced as a result of the fire. This article is entitled, Pease Holds Black History Event to Celebrate Diverse Campus, by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Pease Communications and Technology hosted its annual Black History Festival on February 29th to celebrate its diverse campus and black history. The festivities included refreshments, dancing, and music. However, much of the night was spent in a Pease auditorium, where Pease family liaison Courtney Ratliff quizzed the audience with a Who Am I game involving black historical figures. Example, I began my career as a child entertainer and was the first African American to be nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress. Who am I? With the campus being as diverse as ours, It's important to recognize all the cultures that are involved here, Ratliff said. Each important story, each individual culture, helps create the entire picture of America. It's critical for us to be able to tell those stories and share that information with our community and with our school family. Ratliff grew up in Midland. He said these kinds of festivals and celebrations were typically a part of the church community growing up, but he said it's important to him that schools teach all parts of American history. I hope that everyone was able to take away a sense of unity, Ratliff said about the event. This is the second year we've done it, and in both years we've had the recitation of the I Have a Dream speech. One of the things that I hope everyone always takes away is that in order for us to be our best as a country, we have to do it together. Local pastor and Pease Crossing Guard Bill Palmer recited the famous speech. Ratliff said Palmer was classmates with his parents, and they have known each other since he was young. It's important for the kids to see him as not just a crossing guard, but for a wise man who does more than just that. I hate for anyone to be just in a bottle. So I want them, school community students, to see Mr. Bill, as they call him, in a different light. In addition, the Midland High School step team, the Soul Steppers, performed step dancing routines intermittently on Thursday. Ratliff shared that stepping originally became popular in fraternities and sororities at historically black colleges and universities around the country. This year, Midland High School implemented a step team, according to Ratliff. Britannica defines the dance style as, quote, a complex, synchronized, dance-like performance that blends African folk traditions with popular culture, unquote. As February, National Black History Month, has now gone by on the calendar, Ratliff shared that black history is American history, and it is important to celebrate the achievements of all Americans, no matter their background. If we do that, we will be a more united country all the way around, he said. This article is entitled Sneak Preview of Retro Funk, Ahead of Soft Opening Saturday, by Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Retrofunk wants to provide community and nostalgia for Midlanders via retro gaming. The new gaming store, owned by Raul Mendez and Marco Ramos, will sell retro games from Atari to current generation games, accessories, collectibles, and more. Most of the merchandise will come from the co-owner's personal collection. We're really just trying to bring that memory back, Mendez said. When they would sit in front of their TV, put in their favorite game cartridge into their console, and they would be playing all day. And we just want to bring that nostalgic feeling for them and memories. Retrofunk will also hold gaming tournaments and events for the community to interact through gaming. The location will hold its soft grand opening on Saturday, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at 2610 West Front Street, Suite A. Festivities will include an opportunity to game for free, a raffle for store credit, a limited edition t-shirt, and two tourna bands. A taco truck called Shawnee's Shack will be at the event. This article is entitled Steep Path to Recovery. Many panhandle homes that burned in the ongoing wildfires weren't insured. By Joshua Fechter, the Texas Tribune. Fritch. Many panhandle residents whose dwellings and possessions burned in the region's ongoing wildfires may never financially recover for one simple reason. Their homes weren't insured. A lot of the people who have lost a home had no insurance, Governor Greg Abbott said at a Friday press conference. So there are a lot of people in great need right now. Texans pay some of the highest homeowners insurance premiums in the country. Increased risk of extreme weather events, at least partially driven by climate change, have driven up those costs. Growth in homeowners insurance rates here outpaced the rest of the nation last year, straining Texans' ability to pay. In Texas, those without insurance are also more likely to be those who have a harder time recovering from disaster, lower-income households, and rural residents. That means Texans without insurance face a steep, if not impossible, path to restore what financial well-being they had before a disaster strikes. Patricia Hester, a 76-year-old Fritch resident, is among several Panhandle residents whose home was destroyed by a wildfire that swept through her neighborhood on the town's south side last Tuesday. She dropped her homeowner's insurance on her manufactured home about a decade ago because of rising costs. "When you're on a limited income, something has to give," Hester said. "You have to eat and be able to get gas in the car. So that's what I gave." It's common for families, particularly those that are low income, in areas destroyed by the Panhandle fires to not have homeowners insurance, local officials and community leaders said. Many simply can't afford it, and because they own their homes outright, nothing requires them to carry it, they said. Julie Winters, the executive director for Hutchinson County United Way, said about 70 families in Fritch, whose homes had been damaged or destroyed, asked the organization for assistance on Friday. Most of them didn't have homeowners insurance, she said. "This is a lower socioeconomic level of the community that got hit," Winters said. "They probably cannot afford insurance." Texas homeowners who go without insurance tend to be lower income, according to an analysis of U.S. Census Bureau data conducted by the Texas Real Estate Research Center at Texas A&M University. Homeowners in the state's rural areas are more likely to not have insurance than their urban counterparts, the analysis found. Some 11% of homeowners in the state's major metropolitan areas don't have homeowners insurance, whereas about 26% of homeowners in rural areas lack it. Further complicating matters, several homes that burned down were manufactured homes, which homeowners can struggle to get insured. That's because insurers consider them more risky investments since they are highly vulnerable to fires and other natural disasters, said Thomas Chandler, deputy director of the National Center for Disaster Preparedness at Columbia University. And homeowners insurance is considered the most clear-cut avenue to seek financial restitution after a major disaster, experts told the Tribune. Going without it means homeowners would have to pay for repairs and rebuilding out of pocket, or rely on assistance from the public and private sectors that may not come. Officials haven't determined the full scope of the disaster as the fires continue to rage, though it's believed hundreds of homes have been damaged or destroyed. The ultimate scale of the damage will determine whether displaced residents and others affected by the wildfires qualify for federal disaster aid under an emergency declaration. Abbott said Friday he is waiting on a full assessment of the damages before requesting a declaration from the federal government. Even if the assistance that can come with a federal disaster declaration arrives, it likely won't fully replace what many homeowners in the Panhandle lost, Chandler said. It's really more get-back-on-your-feet money, designed to enable you to just get started again, Chandler said. Stacy McFall, a 52-year-old certified nursing assistant who lives in Fritch, said she tried to obtain insurance to cover her childhood home, which she moved into about 14 years ago. But the home didn't sit on a foundation, she said, so no insurer would write her a policy. Flames engulfed McFall's home Tuesday. She had just enough time to pack her three dogs and a stack of clothes into her car before she evacuated, she said. I don't know what's going to happen, McFall said. You feel kind of numb. You don't know if you're going to find a home. Everything is burnt to a crisp, and I have to start all over again with everything. McFall's son and daughter, who live in Dallas and Austin respectively, have asked her to come live with them, she said, but she doesn't want to move. This is my home, McFall said. The Texas Tribune is a member-supported, nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texans on state politics and policy. Learn more at attexastribune.org. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, March 6th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Study IDs Area Routes Towns for Closer Look by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. While planning is underway for a western leg of Interstate 14 to connect the Permian Basin's energy production with national defense installations and other economic spheres, agriculture and consumer goods, it won't become a reality for a number of years. Even so, progress is being made, and the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, MOTRAN, recently provided an update on the I-4 implementation plan. Establishing the new I-14 will come in stages, Steve Linhart, project development manager with the Texas Department of Transportation, told those in attendance. The initial stage will be upgrading existing interstate, U.S. or state highways to interstate standards. Linhart said several existing roadways have been identified that could be part of the I-14 corridor. Interstate 20, which will be a part of a future port-to-plains route. U.S. Highway 87, future I-14 North, and part of the port-to-plains. U.S. Highway 190, to be part of the I-14 corridor. U.S. Highway 385, to become a future interstate yet to be designated. State Highway 158, future I-14 North and part of the Ports to Plains route. FM 305, a future interstate to be designated. Loop 338, a future interstate to be designated. Linhart said four communities have been singled out for additional impact studies: South Odessa, Crane, McCamey, and Ira Ann. He explained that the footprint for upgrading to interstate standards could have a significant impact on those communities, warranting a closer look. The implementation plan will be published this month, he said. Documents detailing the planning process, as well as recommendations for each TxDOT district the I-14 will cross, and all data collected in the implementation study will be documented, he said. He told his audience that from planning to construction can be a 10 to 12-year process, but it gives the opportunity to incorporate new technology and ancillary facilities. He listed as new technology intelligent transportation communication and connected and automated vehicle infrastructure. Ancillary facilities include safety rest areas, truck parking areas, pedestrian and bike facilities, and electric vehicle charging stations. The 1,600-mile I-14 will span 7 TxDOT districts, 44 Texas cities and towns, and 32 Texas counties, and will ultimately span 5 states from Texas to Georgia. This is the Life Tributes column. Thomas Risher Newman, December 16, 1941 to February 29, 2024. Thomas Risher Newman, 82, of Stanton, passed away on February 29th. Services will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, March 6th at First Baptist Church in Big Spring. Interment will follow at Trinity Memorial Park. Tom was born on December 16, 1941 in Big Spring to Thomas and Kawana Newman. Tom married Marilyn Sale on June 21, 1963. They had three children, Kevin, Kendall, and Cody. Tom and Marilyn would have been married 61 years this coming June. He is survived by his wife Marilyn, son Kevin, and wife Mandy Newman of Stanton, daughter Cody and husband Lonnie Horwood of Sterling City, and bonus son Rusty and wife Melinda Allred of Graham, as well as seven grandchildren and six great-grandchildren. He is also survived by his brother Fred and wife Deborah Newman of Del Rio. He is preceded in death by his parents Thomas and Kawana Newman, son Kendall Newman, and nephew Clinton Newman. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to First Baptist Church of Stanton Building Fund, P.O. Box 1168, Stanton, 79782. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Francis Phillips, November 16, 1949 to February 28, 2024. Frances Marie Frankie Phillips, 74, of Kemp, Texas, passed away on February 28th at her home in Kemp. Frankie was born on November 16, 1949, in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, to parents Stephen Curtis and Dorothy Mae Heaton Hinshaw. Frankie graduated in Midland, Texas, as a member of the class of 1967. She married the love of her life, Keith Phillips, on September 1, 1978, in Midland, and they spent a loving 45 years together. They went on to have two sons, David and Carson. Frankie was preceded in death by her parents, Stephen and Dorothy Hinshaw, along with her four siblings. She is survived by her husband, Keith Phillips, sons David Phillips and wife Lisa, and Carson Phillips and wife Kristen, as well as grandchildren Jackson, Emery, Nora, and Logan, as well as numerous nephews, nieces, and extended family and friends. Roger Allen Ball. Roger Allen Ball, 98, of Midland, passed away on February 17th. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 9th, at Manor Park Chapel in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Hector Flores. Hector Flores, 85, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, February 29th. Viewing will be Thursday, March 7th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service is set for Friday, March 8th at 2 p.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral service is under the direction of Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Sylvia Arellano. Sylvia Arellano, 58, passed away on Thursday, February 29th. Viewing will be Thursday, March 7th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary beginning at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, March 8th at 10 a.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Teofilo Cordova. Teofilo Cordova, 78, passed away on March 3rd. Viewing will be Wednesday, March 6th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to begin at 6 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com.
Quick hits. Share Walk, Sharing Hands, a Respite Experience, has scheduled its 15th annual Share Walk. The event will begin at 9 a.m. April 20th at Astound Broadband Stadium, 801 North Loop 250 in Midland. As the largest of two fundraisers hosted by the organization, The Shooters That Share, Clay Shoot, is the other, and scheduled for July the 19th. Both help raise money for the nonprofit, whose focus is helping families with a special needs child. Bouncers and other children's activities will also be on site, including lunch provided by Market Street. All proceeds will remain local. Founded as a nonprofit in 2009, Share currently works with 170 families in Odessa, Midland, and the surrounding areas to provide services such as respite care, support groups, support for siblings, and mom and dad nights out. The nonprofit offers much-needed assistance for those raising special needs children, including those with Down syndrome, autism, and those with other medical issues. In 2023, more than 3,000 people attended the Share Walk. Participants can join as single entries, groups, families, and companies that also sponsored employees and the event. Tables with resource information will also be available. Call 432-818-1250 for more information. Ribbon cutting. Breaking through barriers. The Ribbon Cutting February the 21st at Methodist Children's Home Family Outreach in the Permian Basin was more than just an event. It was an open house of community support. Facilitated by the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, it symbolized a new chapter of empowerment and care for children, youth, and families. Here's to building bridges and creating a nurturing haven at 706 Adams Avenue in Odessa. For more information, call 432-614-1021 or visit mch.org. Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, proving a hit. The Dolly Parton Imagination Library is off to a great start in Ector County. The Education Foundation is partnering with Chevron and Dolly Parton's Imagination Library to provide one engaging, high-quality book a month to Ector County children from birth to age 5 at no cost to families. Chevron donated $100,000 toward the effort. Executive Director of Development Celeste Potter said they have funding budgeted for every child in Ector County from 0 to 5 to have a book. It's about 8 to 12 weeks from the time a child signs up to when they receive their first book. The total population under the age of 5 is currently 14,402 children, Potter said in a recent interview. She added that the venture has started off well, with 1,747 children signed up as of February the 28th. We did the press conference on December the 14th, and the only other real push we're doing has been on social media. We have a full committee made up of community volunteers, and we're in the process of preparing information packets that we'll deliver to the hospitals, to doctor's offices, to daycares, anywhere where we feel we can reach the children in those populations, Potter said. Information packets also will be given to nonprofit organizations that they can display in their offices wherever it's appropriate. They are also hoping to coordinate an agreement with the hospitals so when a woman has a baby, information on signing up for the Imagination Library is in her discharge papers. Right now, all the registration is online, but Potter said they are working on cards and registration forms where people can mail in their information or scan a QR code to register online. Everything will be in English and Spanish. The first book children get from the Imagination Library is The Little Engine That Could. It's a very high-quality book, Potter said. The book includes a message from Dolly Parton as well. Potter added that the foundation is excited to see the program come to life. Parents have to sign their children up. They have to reside in Ector County. If they move out of Ector County to another community, there is a thing in there where they go to update their address. If they're moving to another community that has this program, they'll be transferred into it. We've already even got a few transfers ourselves of people who've moved to Odessa, and when they put in their new address, it shipped on to us, Potter said. Anytime any kid comes here and they sign up, they get it until their fifth birthday, she added. On their birthday each year, Dolly Parton also sends a happy birthday video message that the parent can show their child if they choose to. It's meant to be very engaging. There's a Spanish option available, so if parents needed Spanish choices when they register, they can click Spanish and they have bilingual books that they send out. It's for everybody. But the more kids that get books in their hand before they ever get here in pre-K or kindergarten, the better off we'll all be so they can get some exposure to more words. That's what it's all about, Potter said. She added that Andrews ISD is interested in Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, so she's hoping it will expand into surrounding communities like Midland and Mohans. The Education Foundation can't reach beyond Ector County. But if we could all be doing this as a regional effort, just think of the impact that could have on us in 5 years. It could be huge. We just have to have an organization in those communities who will take responsibility for it. The funding is probably the hardest part, but it's only on average $2.29 per book per child. That includes the postage. The Ector County, it's a little bit more because we're a pretty large county. But for some of these similar areas, it should not be as difficult to find the funding. So I'm hoping that I can meet with enough individuals in those communities to get some interest so we can get this started. We were very fortunate Chevron is the one who stepped up and really helped us make this happen. They gave us a huge contribution, and I'm so hoping that we can just spread the word and find partners for the surrounding communities, Potter said. In a literacy-connected activity, there will be a Bookworms Literacy Festival from 10 a.m. to noon, April the 27th at Lawndale Park. There will be information out at that site about Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, our Bookworms Literacy Program, Potter said. Other organizations and businesses have been invited too, at no cost to them, set up booths to provide books to children and have games and a celebration of literacy. We have a vendor who's going to be coming out just to provide hot dogs for free to families. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and we are working on getting some fun mascots that can be there, such as Clifford the Big Red Dog and Curious George, and fingers crossed, Scooter the Bookworm will make his first appearance as well. We had a very generous donor reach out to us and just kind of touched base about all things literacy, and we started talking about how cool it would be to have a mascot. I told her, yeah, but they're kind of expensive, and she put a check in the mail, so we have our mascot coming, Potter said. High school students can earn Texas Scholar hours by being the mascot. We're signing up vendors right now. I think I have 12 vendors currently signed up. We're doing another big push for that. We have been really pleased with their response so far. There's like a nice walking trail around that park. We're going to have a water station, and ECISD Health Services is going to man the water station and pass out information on the importance of hydration. We're going to have someone there doing hot dogs, and then along that walking trail, people will be able to set up with booths for enhanced activities for their children to do or to take home to do. That's all literacy-focused, Potter said. First Five will also be participating, and their Roll and Read event is April the 6th. Its website says First Five Permian Basin focuses on improving early childhood, community health, and education outcomes in Midland and Ector counties. First Five aims to improve health and education outcomes within the community through the implementation of three free evidence-based home visiting programs, home instructions for parents of preschool youngsters, nurse family participation, and parents as teachers. Each free program provides families with a personal educator, access to high-quality curriculum and lessons, parent and child screenings/assessments, and a diverse resource network to help all children in the community reach their fullest potential. We'll be participating in their event as well. At their event, we'll have Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, information, and bookworms, Potter said. Also coming up April 23rd is Nashville Songwriters Under the West Texas Stars at the Ector Theater. The event offers a sneak preview into the songwriting process and includes performances. Dear Dr. Roach, I recently contracted a rather severe case of bacterial pneumonia, requiring 10 days of amoxicillin. It has left me with a problem. I have an enlarged prostate. Prior to getting pneumonia, I had to go to the bathroom 3 times a night, which I could handle. Now I have to urinate every hour on average, which is keeping me from getting a good night's sleep. Why the change, and can anything be done about it? Dr. Roach answers, a sudden change in urinary frequency leads me to suspect that something has happened other than just an enlarged prostate. The first thing I would consider would be medication. Amoxicillin doesn't worsen the prostate, so you should ask your doctor or pharmacist if you were given another medicine at the time you had pneumonia. Antihistamines are common causes. I would also be concerned that you might have a urine infection. Some bacterial pneumonias can be complicated by bacteria in the blood, which can then go into the urinary system. Amoxicillin, however, is a pretty good antibiotic for the urinary system, so unless the bacteria is highly resistant, this doesn't seem likely. Still, a urine test would be appropriate. If you had a urinary catheter, a Foley, placed, this can exacerbate prostate problems after it is removed due to trauma and inflammation. A stone can also cause these symptoms. If none of these are the issue, then it is time to visit a urologist who can do some flow studies and look at how much urine is in your bladder after you finish urinating. If it's just the enlarged prostate, medicines like tamsulosin help immediately, while finasteride and similar medications shrink the prostate slowly over a span of months. You can contact Dr. Keith Roach, R-O-A-C-H, at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Female officer wins recognition. UTPB Police Officer Georgia Reyes is being recognized for the great work she's doing for the University of Texas Permian Basin. Recently, she was named Officer of the Year for the UTPB Police Department, as well as Officer of the Month for the entire UT system. It comes as no surprise to those who knows Reyes that she's being recognized. Officer Reyes always comes to work with a smile on her face and a positive attitude, ready to go above and beyond to assist her fellow officers and the citizens of Odessa, said Officers Reyes Supervisor Sergeant Viviana Vasquez. It's hard to find someone in this field who has dealt with things she has, that maintains such a friendly, positive outlook on everything. If you're not her friend, it's only because she hasn't met you yet. I enjoy working at UTPB PD because of my amazing co-workers. They are a large part of why I love my job so much. I work with great people that support me and push me to do better, added Reyes. One of the best parts of her job, she works on an all-female shift. We work very well together, and it is very encouraging to have a female supervisor that has a great work ethic and is just tough and hardworking, added Reyes.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.